Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal here on Revolution Radio, this first day of November 2023. My special guest today, Mike Cunningham, is a friend of long standing. We've done many shows together. Mike deals with international students worldwide, of course. And today, after the first segment, he's going to have a couple of students make a presentation about Smedley Butler, the most honored Marine Corps officer in U.S. history, with two Congressional Medals of Honor, who wrote a pamphlet called War is a Racket, explaining how, in retrospect, he realized his career had been devoted to promoting the interests of big business in the United States, really as an instrument of colonialism. Meanwhile, I want to begin with updates on what's going on in the world, especially in relation to Gaza, and here the bombing of the refugee camps is exposing the horrific character of Israel. One story coming from Truth Out: Israeli military bombs Gaza's largest refugee camp, killing at least 50. Significant, it's Truth Out. That's a Democrat organization. Israeli military bombed Gaza's largest refugee camp on Tuesday, killing dozens, if not hundreds, of Palestinians. The Jabala refugee camp in northern Gaza has been completely destroyed, Gaza's interior ministry has reported. An Israeli Defense Force spokesman has confirmed that the strike was orchestrated by Israeli forces. The death count, if it varies, depending on the source, will likely not be known for days or longer. At least 400 killed, according to the Gazans. Here's another. This is from Middle East Eye. Israel-Palestine Live. Israeli massacre in refugee camp for a second day in a row. Heavy clashes between Palestinian fires and Israeli troops reported in Gaza. For any serious philosophy nerd, Jewish philosophy is indispensable for understanding the development of human knowledge. For years, I've been obsessed with Philo of Alexandria, an early Jewish philosopher who treated the stories of Scripture as allegories, avoiding the literal interpretation of the Torah common at the time. as a youth, right in the first century BCE Hellenistic thinker, were as revolutionary as later medieval thinkers Thomas Aquinas and Averroes, who similarly thought to reconcile Greek philosophy and faith. There's more here going on, but what I think is striking is that this is not a war that appears to be fought to advance the economic interests of American corporations, but rather more on ideological grounds and to promote Jewish supremacy and the belief that they're entitled to the greater Israel from the Euphrates to the Nile. Here we have another report now. This is coming from Southfront, highly reliable. Israel does not stop massacre in Gaza Strip, strikes at refugee camps. On October 31st, Israeli Defense Force continued airstrikes throughout the Gaza Strip. A number of victims on the Israeli bombing of the Gaza Strip has reached 8,525. The Ministry of Health of the Palestinian Enclave reported. Among the dead, 3,542 children, 2,187 women. The Israelis do not care. This is absolutely monstrous. Here's another from Al Jazeera. Israel Hamas war update, dozens killed in Jabali camp, Gaza officials say. They got photos, too, of protests in Mablus against the Jabalia bombing. Palestinians have taken to the streets of central Mablus in the occupied West Bank to protest against the Israeli air attack on the Jabalia refugee camp. Humanitarian groups have said the bombing should be a wake-up call to world leaders to secure a ceasefire. Here is another very striking. This is from Mike Adams. Israel has demonstrated that it's a terrorist state.
October 31st, 2020. Thank you for joining me. Halloween, of course, is the holiday recognized in the United States where people look like they're dying and they walk around like zombies. In other words, every day in America, it's pretty much every day is Halloween day if you take a good hard look at people. No, I'm kidding. All right. We've got some really major news that as of the moment I'm recording this, no one else has put the pieces of this puzzle together. Let me give it to you in summary format, and then we'll go into details. We've got a lot to cover today. And in fact, my whole original plan of what this was going to be has been smashed to bits by the following news. So it came out today, a leaked document that's been verified from the Israeli Ministry of Intelligence came out and said that there has been a plan in place of a forced displacement of all Gaza civilians to push them to Egypt so that Israel could basically steal Gaza, the entire Gaza Strip, for, quote, greater Israel. Now, those of you who have been monitoring some of the history or learning about the history of Israel, you will notice that ever since 1948, Israel gets into wars with Palestinians and then always ends up taking more land, starting with the Nakba in 1948, displacing or murdering, 750,000 Palestinians were displaced at that time. And I don't know how many were murdered at that time, but, you know, you go through all the wars, the Six-Day War and on, all the different conflicts, and Israel just keeps taking more and more and more and more land, and so-called Palestine keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, this idea of standing down on October 7th and allowing Hamas to carry out these terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians was designed, we now know, and I've been reporting this, it was designed to get the Israeli people and the American people to emotionally support the extermination of Gaza and the complete displacement of the 2.3 million Palestinians who live there. So that, again, so that Israel could just steal the land and make it greater Israel. That plan has come out. That's big news all by itself, but that's not even the biggest news or the whole picture. The bigger story is that as of right now, Netanyahu's plan has been thwarted because he can't do it without the support of the United States. And so this is actually, this is the biggest news in the world right now, that Israel's plan to completely exterminate the Palestinians, to wipe them away, and to seize Gaza for greater Israel, that plan has failed. And it failed even before the main ground assault got underway. And this means that Netanyahu is finished. This means that we are now at the beginning stages of what's going to become an internal Israeli revolution of sorts against Netanyahu, who represents what is considered to be the far right version of the Israeli government. There's going to be an internal revolt in Israel because of, well, the failures of the IDF on October 7th, but it's going to come out probably that Netanyahu, you know, ordered the stand down. It was all allowed. But even if that doesn't come out, the failures of Netanyahu to manage this situation and the destruction of Israel's reputation on the world stage because Israel refused to negotiate, Israel refused to recognize a ceasefire, Israel refused to allow humanitarian aid into the civilians, and Israel's military bombed hospitals. They bombed a Turkish hospital in just the last day. They bombed a Greek hospital. They bombed, you know, places of worship, mosques, clinics, water treatment facilities, and residential buildings. The reputation of Israel, as Scott Ritter explained yesterday, has been demolished worldwide, even in the eyes of people like myself, who previous to this had nothing whatsoever against Israel. I was a fan of Israel. I mean, some of my friends are Israelis, like the people I train with in Krav Maga, for example. But what I've learned since October 7th, watching Israel's actions and its lack of integrity and its just relentless killing of civilians and women and children and cancer patients getting bombed in the hospital, it has altered my view of Israel forever. It's going to take a long time for Israel to regain its reputation. And what's happening is that the internal people in Israel are now seeing Netanyahu not as the savior of Israel, not as the man who will follow biblical scripture and deliver Israel to victory, but rather Netanyahu is increasingly seen as the man that brought Israel to its defeat, the man that has destroyed Israel's reputation in the eyes of the Western world, from which Israel receives billions of dollars in funding and, of course, military support and so on. And this reputation damage that has been done to Israel by Netanyahu, this will begin to trickle through the electorate in America as the voters start to pressure their members of Congress, stop funding Israel, right? You're going to hear that more and more and more. And you're going to see more calls by American voters on the left and the right denouncing any candidates that support additional military funding for Israel, given that Israel is using those military funds to carry out what is clearly genocide against.
I think that's really quite brilliant. I think Mike Adams there has it exactly right. This is actually a fascinating development where Israel has become a full-fledged terrorist state. There are a lot of other reports that yield similar conclusions. Here's one, if I can pull it up. It looks like I can. Unimportant. Meanwhile, this is extremely telling now. This is from antiwar.com. Israel told the United States mass civilian casualties were an acceptable price of the Gaza campaign. Get this. During conversation with Israeli officials, it became clear to the Biden admin that Israel believed mass civilian casualties were an acceptable price of the bombing campaign in Gaza, the New York Times reported on Monday. Now, mind you, the New York Times is absolutely Zionist controlled, so for them to make this concession is striking. The Times report said that Israeli officials referred to U.S. and allied bombing campaigns in Germany and Japan, during World War II that killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. The reference included U.S. firebombing of Japanese cities, which killed around 100,000 in Tokyo one night in 1945, as well as dropping the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Don't they realize these were monstrous war crimes committed by the Allies in the United States? That they have been codified as war crimes under the Hague and the Geneva Conventions and international law? I mean, this is grossly inappropriate to be citing those as precedents, because they're universally acknowledged to have been wrongful acts. According to Gaza's health ministry, at least 8,500 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza since Israel unleashed its bombing campaign after the October 7th Hamas attack. The total includes over 3,500 children. When asked if the U.S. will put limits on Israel's use of U.S.-provided weapons in light of the child casualties, Pentagon spokeswoman Sabrina Sy said, "No, we're not putting any limits on how Israel uses weapons that are provided. It's really up to the Israeli Defense Forces to use and how they're going to conduct their operations. We're not putting any constraints on that." Look at the outrage there. That's just disgusting. That makes us complicit in genocide. Biden is accused of Palestinians of lying about the death toll, but Gaza's health ministry is considered reliable. And the numbers reflect the massive number of bombs Israel has dropped on the enclave. UN official told the Wall Street Journal they believe the death toll is likely much higher. It doesn't include people who are still buried under the rubble. Absolutely right. We not only have Turkey, by the way, sending 100 warships to Israel, and while I initially thought it might have been for humanitarian reasons, Israel has irreparably broken relations and declared that Turkey and Russia are enemies and terrorist nations. Really quite inconceivable, given that, in fact, that designation describes Israel. Yemen, this is now from South Front, which is highly reliable. Yemen is launching military operation against Israel. Yemen is launching a military operation against Israel. Yada Saria, representative of Yemeni Ansar Allah movement, claimed in his briefing on October 31st. The military operation is aimed at supporting the oppressed Palestinian people in their militant resistance. Ansar Allah clarified that the first strike on the enemy had already been launched. On the same day, the Yemeni Houthis claimed responsibility for launching attack on manned aerial vehicles on southern Israel. They promised to continue the attacks, confirming the launch of at least three waves of drones and ballistic missiles. Earlier on October 31st, Israeli military said it would use the HETS Arrow 3 air defense system to intercept a surface-to-surface missile launched toward the country from the Red Sea region for the first time since the escalation of the conflict. Now, you might think that Yemen launching that attack is relatively insignificant because Yemen is a small country. But that's a gross misunderstanding. The Houthis are very battle-hardened, very experienced. They have a lot of sophisticated military equipment, much of which has been provided by Iran. This is a very significant development. And you can count on Syria and Lebanon, but most importantly, Turkey being drawn into the fray in short order. Meanwhile, Brian Shilhavy, the editor of Health Impact News, has a wonderful piece. World War III imminent. Opposition both inside the U.S. and outside the U.S. grows as children continue to be massacred in Palestinian genocide. He begins with a photograph of anti-war protesters disrupting the Senate, many of whom have red paint or even blood on the palms of their hands. Let me share a part with you. Opposition to the U.S. and their funding of Israel's military, which has now reportedly killed over 8,000 Palestinians, including over 3,000 children, is rapidly mounting. Gaza. 3,195 children killed in 3 weeks surpasses annual number of children killed in conflict zones since 2019. The number of children reported killed in Gaza in just 3 weeks has surpassed the annual number of children killed across the world's conflict zones since 2019, Save the Children said. Since October 7th, more than 3,257 children have been reported killed, including at least 3,195 in Gaza, 33 in the West Bank, and 29 in Israel, according to the Ministries of Health in Gaza and Israel, respectively. The number of children reportedly killed in just 3 weeks in Gaza is more than the number killed in armed conflict globally across more than 20 countries over the course of a whole year for the past 3 years. Earlier today, a refugee camp inside of Gaza was bombed, reportedly leaving hundreds dead, including innocent women and children. This story, a massive massacre. Al Jazeera reported describes a scene from Jabalia, from the middle of the giant crater that used to be homes in the Jabala refugee camp. Al Jazeera's Anas al-Sharif described the scene in front of him as rescuers desperately dug into the rubble with their bare hands in footage aired on the network. There was a little girl in this place. We're trying the best to reach that little girl, al-Sharif said, around him. People were attempting to help those trapped or retrieved bodies. Others were in shock over what had happened. Look at the destruction, al-Sharif said as he pointed to the shell of a building. Most of the victims are kids, children, and women. We've seen hundreds of victims here. The destruction is huge. Al-Sharif continued to walk over the rubble amid an apocalyptic scene. It's a massive massacre. You cannot count the number of destroyed buildings in this place. Here's a video he embeds. Check it out.
So some breaking news coming out of Gaza, another mass casualty event. Israel just bombed a whole neighborhood. We're being told 100 have been found so far. And this might be the biggest massacre yet. Israeli airstrikes carpet-bombed an entire neighborhood in Jabalia. This is a refugee camp, and they bombed 15 houses from a mosque to a bakery. Medical sources estimate 100 to 150 killed, at the minimum. So far, 60 dead. And you can see the video here. That number has gone up. They just bombed an entire neighborhood. But it gets worse. In each house, there were at least 20 sheltering inside. This may be the biggest massacre so far, with even more deaths than the hospital bombing.
Here. Let me say now, there's a lot more to that wonderful article, which I highly encourage people to watch. I want to invite Mike Cunningham to comment on the stories we've had here. Mike, please join the conversation. Give us your assessment of what we've heard here. I thought that Mike Adams was especially clear in his thinking about it, that the reputation of Israel has been permanently destroyed and it now properly qualifies as a terrorist state. And sad to say, since the United States was informed in advance that there would be massive civilian casualties and the Department of Defense acknowledged they're putting no restraints on the weapons America was providing to carry it out, we, alas, are complicit. Your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I think you're probably right in that area. And one of the things we could go back to is look at the density of population in the Gaza Strip. It's probably some of the most densely settled areas. It's highly urbanized. It's institutionalized, I guess you would say, refugee camps. It's not a similar type of refugee camps that you would see later, but there are people that are still from wars that past 40, 50, 60 years are gone, and they've lost their land. So when you start bombing and things are so close, it is very seldom would you ever see the accuracy that you would do. So just the idea of trying to invade a densely urban area and start bombing would be totally would fit under many different things, including the 75th anniversary, which is coming up on December the 9th, of the word genocide. So, you know, it would end up being a close call to when you eliminate people like this to work on that genocide. So as we are approaching the 75th anniversary of December the 9th of 48, we might reflect a little bit about some of our actions, because it doesn't look like we've learned too much in the last 75 years.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Mike. I think you got it exactly right. We have just a moment or two before we return to turn to the report by your students on the Smedley Butler. So, you know, would you agree that this does not appear to be a scene where they're driven by economic motivation, though it turns out that there is an enormous natural gas supply off the coast of Gaza that the Israelis, apparently, according to a Dutch source, are already tapping. But I think it's out of frustration of the loss of Ukraine, which they wanted to be the new Israel. And now they're conducting an ethnic cleansing to give themselves all of the former lands of Palestine. Your thoughts?
You may be correct on that, or else it may be something entirely different, that the people who are behind this are behind other things, too. And it, and what ends up happening is the it ends up being the same effect. So we don't know what the intentions are, but the effect ends up being the same. So for all extents and purposes, since we don't have to go to the intention, we just go by what's happening. This is very serious. I can fully agree with you. I don't know. I do not know if we need to look at the, especially judging war. I don't know if you need to look at its intentions sometimes, but the effect is so devastating that this could be called nothing else but that. And it doesn't help out.
We'll be right back with Mike Cunningham and his students on Smedley Butler. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Mike Cunningham, let me say how much I appreciate your making this presentation, because as a former Marine Corps officer myself, I greatly admire Smedley Butler, who is a true American and a patriot, unlike the miserable excuses we have of the Department of Defense, Secretary of Defense, and the leadership of the American military today, who are apparently enthusiastically supporting genocide in Gaza. This is a disgrace to the United States, and our standing in the world, like that of Israel, is precipitous and falling like a rock. Mike, please introduce your students and proceed.
Thank you very much, Dr. Spencer. I have two students today that are going to, we call next generation researchers. We have Kate and we have Lillian. And they will introduce this topic to you and do the slideshow. I'm just going to do the guidance. Go ahead.
Okay, so we're the next generation researchers looking into the mysteries of history, and today we will be focusing on War is a Racket, the Smedley Butler story. War is a racket, it always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives, quoted by Smedley Butler. War is a Racket, the Smedley Butler story. Who, what, why, and how it applies today. Before we get to today's story, we need to look at these following events. Jekyll's Island, sinking of the Titanic, election of 1912, election of senators, income tax, and Federal Reserve, sinking of the Lusitania, invasion of Mexico, election of 1916, USA World War I, Wilson's 14 points, 11-11-1918, King Crane's Commission, Harvard Commission, Wilson's stroke, Wilson's arbitration, Warren G. Harding Senator, Warren G. Harding President, the stock market crash, Wright-Patman Congressman, and the War Bonus March. It is only after these events that we can begin to understand both General Butler and the events of 1933 to 1934. What happens when a series of apparently unrelated events take place? Are they really all coincidence, or were they really coordinated? We will present and you will decide. Conspiracy theories versus coincidence theory. When faced with observations of facts or events that appear to be coordinated, there are two approaches to explain them. First is the conspiracy theory, which is the idea that the apparent parallels of a chance are a result of coordination. And then there's the coincidence theory, which is the idea of the apparent parallels are a result of pure chance. In Jekyll Island, a secret gathering at a secluded island off the coast of Georgia in 1910 that laid the foundations for the Federal Reserve System. Sinking of the Titanic. J.P. Morgan canceled his long-awaited journey just hours before a proposed departure. The meme reads, three of the wealthiest men on earth, whom six were against the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank, happened to be invited aboard for its maiden voyage, John Astor, Isidore Strauss, and Benjamin Guggenheim. Election of 1912. Roosevelt was a war hero, ex-president, cowboy, surviving assassination attempts, but his biggest help was to elect Woodrow Wilson president in 1912. Amendments, the income tax, election of senators, and the Federal Reserve. First, the income tax was the beginning of IRS. Now we can have a big central government. The election of senators creates a need for deep pocket lobbyists and campaign donations. And then the Federal Reserve is a private company that runs American monetary policy to the benefit of the super rich class. The sinking of the Lusitania. Unrestricted U-boat attacks caused the USA to join the war almost 2 years later. Lusitania was carrying ammunition. The U.S. invades Mexico. The punitive expedition against Pancho Villa was a U.S. military campaign that began March 14, 1916, in an attempt to capture the Mexican revolutionary leader. After Villa attacked the village of Columbus, New Mexico, the U.S. government authorized a military expedition of 10,000 soldiers that entered through the state of Chihuahua, Mexico. Over 11 months, the troops failed in their objective. Their goal was to capture Villa. The U.S. military also fought. Who gets us out of war? Wilson's campaign slogan for 1916. He wins a close re-election and then a month later asks for the U.S. entry into World War I with Germany, then declares in April 1917 to declare war on Germany. USA enters World War I, USA to provide men and equipment. Wilson's 14 points. January 8, 1918, addressed to Congress, and it was the plan for the off-year elections and the recipe for disaster. Within the 14 points, 8 deal with geopolitical issues that would have been resolved after the war. First, Russia should have been allowed to operate whatever government it wanted. Belgium should have been evacuated and restored to the situation before the war. France should have had Alsace-Lorraine and any lands taken away during the war restored. The Italian border should have readjusted according to nationality. Self-determination, the national groups in Europe should be given their independence. Romania, Montenegro, and Serbia should be evacuated, and Serbia should have an outlet to the sea. Turkey, the people of Turkey should have a say in their future, and Poland should become an independent state with an outlet to sea. The remaining 6 dealt with general ideologies. These were the most important. Freedom of the seas, an end to secret treaties and negotiations, establishment equal and free trade, arms reduction. 11-11-1918, ceasefire. A ceasefire is not a victory. The U.S. brings their troops back and demobilizes their army. King Crane's Commission 1919 concluded the U.S. needs to send peacekeeper troops to Turkey and Armenia, and they sent around 55,000 to 85,000 troops. The Harbord Commission 1919. General Harbord concluded that the USA needed to send 55,000 to 85,000 troops and foreign aid to Armenia to keep peace. Doctors in consultation call Wilson a very sick. Senate kills 35 fall amendments, test vote, 30 of the Belgian rulers welcomed here in the name of. Andrew Wilson arbitration award. Armenian borders, the Treaty of Sevres, 1928. Senator Warren G. Harding, subcommittee chairman, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 1919 to 1921. Voted against Armenian troops, Armenian aid, and the League of Nations. President Harding, 1921 to 1923, did nothing as the Turkish illegally overthrew the Ottoman government. Greatest crash in Wall Street's history, doge of panic selling overwhelms market, 19 million shares changed hands. The effects of the stock market crash. Americans panicked, took money out of banks. Banks lost money and couldn't pay customers, and by 1933, 11,000 of 25,000 banks in the U.S. had failed. 9 million savings accounts disappeared, 90,000 businesses closed, and 25% of workers were out of work by 1933. Some of the signs that were during the protest were, "Why not a veteran for that job, Mr. Employer? Keep your wartime pledges to soldiers. Keep your promises. Give us work." Governor Cox and Mayor Peters say, "You should give your job to a vet. We want work."
This is a picture of more of the protests occurring when the stock market crashed.
Bonus army turned down. Hoover called the bonus marchers communists and criminals. And then on June 17, 1932, the Senate voted down the Putnam Bill. Putnam.
No jobs, no money. Citizens were restless and the wealthy were worried. John W. Davis and elsewhere.
To take advantage of the situation, the rich and powerful had to have a person who would appeal to the common man while also being a common man.
Their answer was retired General Smedley Butler.
Just a quick biography. At the time of his death, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, also known as the Fighting Quaker, was the most decorated Marine in U.S. history. He was the only person to be awarded a Marine Corps Brevet Medal and a Medal of Honor for 2 separate military actions. He had also become an unrelenting voice against the business of war. Raised by prominent Quaker parents, Smedley Butler defied his pacifist lineage by joining the Marines just before his 17th birthday He served in Honduras, Nicaragua, Mexico, and Haiti, earning his medals of honor in Mexico and Haiti. Butler was also known for his leadership and commitment to the welfare of the man under his command. He rose quickly through the ranks to become, at age 48, one of the youngest major generals. Prior to World War II, Butler spoke against what he saw as the admiration for fascism and for Italy's leader, Benito Mussolini. He was punished for telling an unfavorable story about himself.
The answer was retired General Smithy Butler. The continuation of General Butler's biography. Butler retired from the military in 1931. By then, he was beginning to question U.S. involvement in foreign conflicts. He had come to believe that war, in particular World War I, was really a profitable business for the few at the expense of thousands of lives. He thought of himself as a cog in the imperialist war machine. In a booklet titled War is a Racket, Butler wrote, "In the World War I, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? The general public shoulders the bill, and what is this bill? Newly placed gravestones, mangled bodies, shattered minds. For a great many years as a soldier, I had a suspicion that war was a racket. Not until I retired to civil life did I fully realize it. Now that I see the international war clouds gathering as they are today, I must face it and speak out." War is a Racket grew out of a series of speeches Butler gave to whatever group wanted to hear his views. Though he faced criticism, Butler was a steadfast in his beliefs about war, U.S. imperialism, and growing pro-fascist movement. He spoke frankly and honest about his experience and opinions, and he was very popular with the American public. In 1934, Butler went before the House of Un-American Activities Committee to expose a conspiracy against the government. He had been recruited by a group of wealthy pro-fascists who had hoped to use him in a coup against President Franklin D. Roosevelt. He went along gathering intelligence about the plot and took it to Congress. Butler's assertions were not aggressively pursued, and the matter was largely dismissed. However, an interim report to Congress from HUAC confirmed that the veracity of the plot. The plot thickens. In his testimony before Congress, Butler states that he was repeatedly visited by a somewhat shady cast of characters associated with the American Legion and a series of Wall Street and New York banking and bond trading firms. In July 1933, the first of these men suggested that Butler attend a Legion convention to deliver a prepared speech on the importance of returning to the gold standard and supporting a bonus for veterans of the Great War. Butler supported the soldiers' bonus, but he had no desire to attend the convention and become involved in backroom politicking. The clique repeatedly approached Butler before the convention, repeatedly attempted to bribe him with many thousands of dollars, and repeatedly Butler refused. Eventually, the men resolved to appeal to his sense of reason and revealed more of their plan. Butler was supposed to raise and lead a massive contingent of veterans and soldiers to practically force President Roosevelt to appoint him to the cabinet as a newly minted Secretary for General Affairs, leaving Butler to rule the country while the president remained a figurehead. The conspirators drew upon extensive travels from Germany and Italy to Stalin's Soviet Union, concluding that a bit of fascism was both necessary and proper in the United States as well. Should Butler continue to refuse, the plot's backers would move instead to other candidates, including General Douglas MacArthur.
Why? Some more just information about General Butler. He was a part of the bonus army. He was a war bonus, and General Butler was the wealthy called to arms.
War is a racket, it always has been. The only way to smash this racket is to conscript capital and industry and labor before the nation's manhood can be conscripted. 1 month before the government can conscript the young men of the nation, it must conscript capital and industry and labor. Let the officers and the directors and the high-powered executives of our armaments, factories and our munitions, makers and our shipbuilders and our airplane builders and the manufacturers of all other things that provide profit in wartime, as well as the speculators, be conscripted to get $30 a month, the same wage as the lads in the trenches get.
Our boys were sent off to die with beautiful ideals painted in front of them. No one told them that dollars and cents were the real reason they were marching off to kill and die. This was a quote stated by Smedley Butler, who had lived through 1881 and 1940.
War is never fought for freedom, it's always fought for the rich. In the World War I, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns. How many other war millionaires
falsify their tax returns, no one knows. Major General Snowy Butler. I served in all commission ranks from second lieutenant to major general, and during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism, quoted by Mr. Butler. General Butler testifies to Congress. General Butler was asked to help overthrow the U.S. federal government. The Wall Street push. Why is so little known about the 1930s coup against FDR? The so-called January 6th episode in Washington, D.C. was not the real time this may have happened. It was not the only time this may have happened. The alleged Donald Trump's January 6th plot to overthrow the democratically elected president was neither impulsive nor uncoordinated, but straight out of the playbook of another American coup attempt, the 1933 Wall Street push against newly elected Franklin Delano Roosevelt. America had hit rock bottom, beginning with the stock market crash 3 years earlier. Unemployment was at 16 million and rising. Farm foreclosures exceeded 500,000. More than 5,000 banks had failed, and hundreds of thousands of families had lost their homes. Financial capitalists had biked millions of customers and rigged the market. There were no government safety nets, no unemployment insurance, minimum wage, Social Security, or Medicare. On March 4th, 1933, more than 100,000 people had gathered on the east side of the U.S. Capitol for Roosevelt's inauguration. The atmosphere was slate gray and ominous, the sky suggesting a calm before the storm. That morning, rioting was expected in cities throughout the nation, prompting predications of violent revolution. Army machine guns and sharpshooters were placed at strategic locations along the route. Not since the Civil War had Washington been so fortified with armed police guarding federal buildings. FDR thought government and civilized society had an obligation to abolish poverty, reduce unemployment, and redistribute wealth. Roosevelt's bold New Deal's experiments inflamed the upper class, provoking a backlash from the nation's most powerful bankers, industrialists, and Wall Street brokers, who thought the policy was not only radical but revolutionary. Worried about losing their personal fortunes for runaway government spending, this fertile field of loathing led to the traitor to his class appellant for FDR. What that fellow Roosevelt needs is a .38 caliber revolver right at the back of his head, a respectable citizen said at a Washington dinner party. March 4, 1933. Continued. In a climate of conspiracies and intrigues, and against the backdrop of charismatic dictators in the world, such as Hitler and Mussolini, the sparks of anti-Rooseveltism ignited into a full-fledged hatred. Many American intellectuals and business leaders saw Nazism and fascism as viable models for the U.S. The rise of Hitler and the explosion of the Nazi Revolution, which frightened many European nations, struck a chord with prominent American elites and anti-Semites, such as Charles Lindbergh and Henry Ford. Hitler's elite brown shirts, a mass body of party stormtroopers separate from the 100,000-man German army, was a stark symbol to the powerless American masses. Mussolini's black shirts, the military arm of his organization, made up of 200,000 soldiers, were a potent image of strength to a nation that felt emasculated. A divided country and FDR's emboldened powerful enemies made the plot to overthrow him seem plausible. With restless uncertainty, volatile protests, and ominous threats, America's right wing was inspired to form its own paramilitary organizations. Militias sprung up throughout the land, their self-described patriots chanting, "This is despotism, this is tyranny. The summer of 1933, it gets very serious. So when retired U.S. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Darlington Butler claimed he was recruited by a group of Wall Street financiers to lead a fascist coup against FDR and the U.S. government in the summer of 1933, Washington took him seriously. Butler, a Quaker and a first world hero dubbed the Maverick Marine, was a soldier who was idolized by veterans, which represented a huge and powerful voting bloc in America. Famous for his daring exploits in China and Central America, Butler's reputation was impeccable. He got rousing obituations when he claimed that during his 33 years in the Marines, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big businesses, for Wall Street, and for bankers. And the plot thickens. Butler later testified before Congress that a bond broker and American Legion member named Gerald McGuire approached him with the plan. McGuire told him the coup was backed by a group called the American Liberty League, a group of business leaders which formed in response to FDR's victory and whose mission it was to teach government the necessity of respect for the rights of persons and property. Members included J.P. Morgan Jr., Irene DuPont, Robert Sterling Clark of the Singer Sewing Machine Fortune, and the chief executives of General Motors, Bird's Eye, and General Foods. FDR alienates many people. FDR policies make people on all sides upset. The New Deal is doing too much. Business community and Republicans. NB complicated with too many codes. Government shouldn't support unions and wages. That is the job of the market, supply and demand. Government schemes like TVA, unfair competition, since private companies aren't funded by the government. ND, like Stalin's five-year plans, are an off-free market. FDR is behaving like a dictator, and the wealthy were wealthy because they worked hard for it. High taxes on wealthy discouraged people from working hard to achieve wealth and gave money to people who did little for it. Banks of entire nations are closed for a brief holiday. Federal government to provide temporary medium of exchange. Critics of the New Deal. Francis E. Thompson created a financially impossible plan to provide government pensions for the elderly. Father Charles E. Coughlin, a Catholic priest who blamed business owners, especially Jewish ones, for the economic crisis. Wei Long, U.S. Senator from Louisiana, who proposed that income and inheritance taxes on the wealthy be used to give each a college education. A housewife looks at the president in which one voter gets good and mad and speaks her mind on a number of things by Ms. Philip Wiley. Critics of the New Deal, not popular with big businesses, businesses lost confidence and did not expand to create jobs. There was too much government control, and some thought the New Deal didn't go far enough and the government should have spent more to help the unemployed. American Liberty League, created in 1934, conservative opposition to FDR's program, combined business leaders with anti-New Deal politicians and organized opposition to the New Deals, especially Social Security and the AAA. Al Smith, the American Liberty League, the New Deal of Socialism. American Liberty League moving against FDR. The 30-hour week bill. FDR proposes a 30-hour work week. The American Liberty League worries that FDR is proposing communism. Smelly Butler testifies in Washington, D.C. 1934, investigation of Nazi propaganda activities and investigation of certain other propaganda activities. Public hearing before the Special Committee on Un-American Activities, House of Representatives, 73rd Congress, Second Session, at Washington, D.C., December 29, 1934. Testimony changes. The published testimony. Ben McGuire said that he was the chairman of the Distinguished Guest Committee of the American Legion on Louis Johnson's staff, that Louis Johnson had, at McGuire's suggestion, put my name down to be invited as a distinguished guest of the Chicago Convention, what Butler really said. Ben McGuire said that he was the chairman of the Distinguished Guest Committee of the American Legion on Louis Johnson's staff that Louis Johnson had at McGuire's suggestion put my name down to be invited as a distinguished guest of the Chicago Convention. That Johnson had then taken this list presented by McGuire of distinguished guests to the White House for approval. That Lewis Powell, one of the secretaries to the president, had crossed my name off and said that I was not to be invited, that the president would not have it. The published testimony. He said, you have got the speech. I said, yes, these fellows, Doyle and McGuire, have gave me the speech. I said, they wrote a hell of a good speech, too, he said. Did those fellows say that they wrote that speech? I said, yes, they did. They told me that it was their business writing speeches. He laughed and said, that speech cost a lot of money. Clark told me that it had cost him a lot of money. He thought that it was a big joke that these fellows were claiming the authorship of that speech. What Butler really said was, you have got that speech. I said, yes, these fellows, Doyle and McGuire, gave me the speech. I said, yes, they wrote a hell of a good speech, too. He said, did those fellows say that they wrote the speech? I said, yes, they did. They told me that it was their business writing speeches. He laughed and said, that speech cost a lot of money. Clark told me that it had cost him a lot of money. Now, either from what he said then or from what McGuire had said, I got the impression that the speech had been written by John W. Davis. One or the other one of them told me that, but he thought that it was a big joke that these fellows were claiming the authorship of that speech. And testimony changes. I think there were, the public testimony. I think there was one other visit to the house because he, McGuire, proposed that I go to Boston to a soldiers' dinner to be given in my honor. He suggested that I go up to Boston to the dinner for the soldiers. He said, we will have a private car for you on the end of the train. You will make a speech at the dinner, and it will be worth $1,000 to you. What he really said, I think there was one other visit to the house because he, McGuire, proposed that I go to Boston to a soldiers' dinner to be given by Governor Ely for the soldiers, and that I was to go with Al Smith. He said, we will have a private car for you on the end of the train and have your picture taken with Governor Smith. The published testimony. He said, when I was in Paris, my headquarters were Morgan and Hodges. We had a meeting over there. I might as well tell you that our group is for you. Head of this organization, Morgan and Hodges are against you. The Morgan interests say that you cannot be trusted, that you will be too radical, and so forth. I said, no, I was interested in it, but I was not headed. Much on the side of the little fellow, you cannot be trusted. They do not want you in the group that tells them that you are the only fellow in America who can get the soldiers together. They say yes, but you will get them together and go in the wrong direction. That is what they really say if you take charge of them. What Butler really said was, when I was in Paris, my headquarters were Morgan and Hodges. We had a meeting over there. I might as well tell you that our group is for you and for the head of this organization. Morgan and Hodges are against you. The Morgan interests say that you cannot be trusted and that you are too radical and so forth, and that you are too much on the side of the little fellow. You cannot be trusted. They are for Douglas MacArthur as the head of it. Douglas MacArthur's term expires in November, and if he is not reappointed, it is to be presumed that he will be disappointed and sore, and they are getting for him to head it. I said, I do not think that you will get the soldiers to follow him, Jerry. He is in bad odor because he put on a uniform and medals to march down the street in the Washington. I know the soldiers. Well, then we will get to Hanford McNider. They either want MacArthur or McNider. They do not want you, but our group tells them that you are the only fellow in America who can get the soldiers together, they say. Yes, but he will get them together and go in the wrong way. That is what they say if you take charge of them. I said McNider won't do either. He will not get the soldiers to follow them because he has been opposed to the bonus. Yes, but we will have him in charge.
Stand by. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with a special report about Smedley Butler after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice.
anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, two of Mike Cunningham's students are giving us a report about Smedley Butler, which is an extraordinarily important and striking but generally not understood, largely ignored event in American history. Please continue.
Okay, as I was saying, yes, but we will have him in charge. And it is interesting to note that 3 weeks later, after this conversation, the matter changed and turned around for the bonus. It is interesting to note that he said that there is going to be a big quarrel over the reappointment of MacArthur. He said that if you watch the president reappoint him, he is going to go right, and if he does not reappoint him, he is going to go left. More testimony changes. The published testimony, yes, he says, you watch. In 2 or 3 weeks, you will see it come out in the paper. There will be big fellows in it. This is to be the background of it. There are to be villagers in the opera. The papers will come out with it. He did not give me the name of it, but he said that it would all be made public, a society to maintain the Constitution, and so forth. We had a lot of talk this time about maintaining the Constitution. I said, I do not see that the Constitution is in any danger. And I asked him again, why are you in this thing? He said, I am a businessman. I have got a wife and children. What Butler really said. The papers will come out with it, and in about 2 weeks, the American Liberty League appeared, which was just about what he described it to be. This is the reason I tied it up with the other thing about Al Smith and some of these other people, because the name that appeared in connection with this Liberty League. Testimony changes again. Is he responsible too for making the Legion a strike-breaking outfit? No, no, he does not control anything in the Legion now. I said, you know very well that it is nothing but a strike-breaking outfit used by capital for that purpose, and that is the reason that they have all those big clubhouses, and that is the reason I pulled out from it. They have been using these dumb soldiers to break strikes. He said Murphy hasn't anything to do with that. He's a very fine fellow. I said, I do not doubt that, but there is some reason for him putting $125,000 into this. More testimony changes that were edited out. He said they could go to John W. Davis or Perkins of the National City Bank and any number of persons and get it. Of course, that may or may not mean anything. That is his reference to John Davis and Perkins of the National City Bank. During my conversation with him, I did not, of course, commit the general to anything. I was just feeling him along. Later, we discussed the question of arms and equipment, and he suggested that they could be obtained from the Remington Arms Company on credit through the DuPonts. I do not think at the time he mentioned the connections of DuPont with the American Liberty League, but he skirted all around it. That is, I do not think he mentioned the Liberty League, but he skirted all around the idea that that was the back door, and that this is the front door. One of the DuPonts is on the board of directors in the American Liberty League, and they own a controlling interest in the Remington Arms Company. In other words, he suggested that Roosevelt would be in sympathy with us and proposed the idea that Butler would be named as the head of the CCC camps by the president as a means of building up this organization. He would then have 300,000 men. Then he said that if that did not work, the general would not have any trouble in missing 500,000 men. Why did the American Liberty League view the New Deal as unconstitutional and un-American? It felt the New Deal limited individual freedom too radically and that its mandatory programs resembled communism. Gerald P. McGuire testifies. American Liberty League preventing the destruction of the American government. American Liberty League, 1934, made up of wealthy business leaders such as Al Smith and John W. Davis. They opposed the New Deal because it was believed that it violated respect for the rights of individuals and property. Charles Coughlin, Francis Thompson, and Wayne Long felt that the poor suffered more with the New Deal. Father Coughlin favored a guaranteed annual income and the nationalization of banks. Dr. Townsend devised a pension plan to provide monthly benefits, but this was too expensive. Senator Long proposed a nationwide social program, Share Our Wealth. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopolies, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war, profiteering. They had began to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. We know now that the government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob, quoted by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Critics from the right, these groups feared FDR was leading the U.S. down the road to socialism. In August of 1934, opponents of FDR's New Deal organized the American Liberty League. The League stated that it would work to defend and uphold the Constitution and to foster the right to work, earn, save, and acquire property. American Liberty League supporting the Constitution. Progress, we need a change. We do not. American Liberty League. American Liberty League, the real purpose of government is to not get into our business. R.E. Devens 9, Jewett Snows, and Earl F. Reed left to right. To show the wealth bus, Senator Wade P. Long, Louisiana, Thunder from the Left, murdered September 8, 1935. Father Colin Radio, Father Charles E. Colin and Dr. Francis Townsend, like Long, they have been peddling their own cure for all recipes for economic recovery for several years. Coughlin, a 43-year-old Catholic priest from Royal Oak, Michigan, a Detroit suburb capital native, to national celebrity when CBS gave him a national radio show in 1930. He reached perhaps 35 million listeners on Sunday evenings with the Golden Hour of the Little Flower, a program that combined homilies on the Gospels with attacks on the evils of communism and the malignant influence of Wall Street bankers who had brought about the Depression by their devotion to the Golden Standard. And Father Coughlin. Did they try to overthrow FDR? You decide. And that's all of the slides.
Oh, very good. Very good. Excellent. Mike. You'd like to join now. I believe that was a tremendous amount of accurate information. The only point at which I took exception was suggesting that on January 6th, Donald Trump had tried to overthrow the government. He had no such intention, and it didn't happen that way. This was an orchestrated event by the FBI, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, the mayor of Washington, D.C., and others to tarnish Trump and to saddle him with false allegations when he was seeking only to exercise his responsibility under the Constitution to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, including, of course, those concerning our elections, which are of paramount importance to the Republic and its integrity. With that exception, however, I thought that your presentation about Smedley Butler was very good and certainly quite comprehensive. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, we try to link together some of these activities to try to show that there's a, if you go back, one of the criticisms always has been that things just happen coincidentally. And we're trying to show things didn't really happen coincidentally. They're kind of orchestrated. Just all of a sudden, like different pieces of the orchestra may be playing different music, but when they put together, it sounds beautifully. When we tied to, the idea that, we're going to be dependent upon a large government, well, you had to have the, you had to first establish the fact of putting together a Federal Reserve. You had to establish why senators need to be elected, not appointed. Well, this way they're going to have to spend millions and millions of dollars. We end up with lobbyists. Many of the problems that we have and we see today have been orchestrated many years before.
Mike, yes, yes, yes. I think that the editing of his testimony to Congress was extraordinarily revealing. It showed, in essence, that even the Senate was willing to condone efforts to overthrow the government of the United States and unwilling to prosecute those responsible because they regarded them as among the leading figures in business and finance in the United States and no doubt thought this would create chaos in America. They may have been right about that, but I believe the public was entitled to know the truth. Smedley Butler placed his reputation and his life at risk by coming forward in such a courageous and patriotic manner to reveal a plot unlike any other in American history, to actually foment an insurrection, which Donald Trump and the patriots in Washington, D.C. on January 6th most certainly were not undertaking. There's a marvelous piece in American Thinker that came out not long thereafter, explained how Trump had not incited, which means encouraging toward imminent illegal action, in order to create that impression. They even edited the text where he told his followers at the Ellipse to peacefully and patriotically protest the theft of the election, which they were entitled to do. I mean, that's a First Amendment right to redress a government for problems that they encounter that government ought to be in a position to solve. And there's certainly no insurrection, no one participating had any thought even remotely that they were going to overthrow the government of the United States. So it's all smoke and mirrors. And yet now, in the Georgia case, perhaps in others, they're wanting to cite what the House committee did, which was a sham investigation, as though it should be taken seriously. That, in my opinion, is an attempt to defeat democracy in America by shamelessly going after to tarnish and libel a president in the exercise of the performance of his duties. I do not believe they'll get away with it, but it won't be for lack of trying. Mike.
Yeah, exactly right. I think one time when we had a video conference and you're talking about, you know, the court of public relations, the court of the public. And I think what they're trying to appeal to is not necessarily legal means. They're trying to convince the public that certain things happened that did not happen. And they have a very low bar there because you basically are trying to prove a non-issue to be. It's hard to prove something not to be something that's false. It's hard to prove it's true. And that's not the burden at all. It should be. They should have the reverse burden and actually prove it was an insurrection. Well, then you'd have to actually have a real investigation. And then you would have to have some of the stuff in place, just like you go back to Lee Harvey Oswald. Much of the testimony that would have been used against him would have been thrown out of court and could not have been used. You know, the pictures fake, the testimony of the wife, a lot of stuff would be totally bad. You know, so I believe that all of a sudden you could start making a very strong case that much of this stuff was, like I said, orchestrated and it was planned, pre-planned, and the same people are doing the same things as are happening today. You know, you're talking about leaders disappearing. We have a question about the health of some of the people who are leaders of concern. We just don't really discuss it too much. And you can easily see that the people's mental prowess has been going downhill. And yet, why are we accepting it and not even questioning it? And this is one of the reasons why it's so concerning to me, especially when we start talking to people. We've been talking to a school in Lebanon
that's within the 10 kilometers of Israel. And they get shelled every single day. You know, they're talking about, you know, some things. So this is becomes a vital part. And it's very hard for students to learn when they're being, you know, in given this information. And plus being
hard,
in the middle of
hard to learn in a war zone, Mike. You got that exactly right. I want to open the lines for callers, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Early today, and in fact, my producer, I'm delighted to say, with me has a question or two of his own. Mitchell, please join the conversation.
Hey, hi, everybody. Do the presenters, do they believe that at the end of World War II, that because the plotters weren't named and they essentially were they able to move forward, you know, with the businessman's plot upon the death of Roosevelt?
I would say yeah, because they were able to keep those big names and those identities a secret, so they were able to go in with the plans that didn't already fail to have like the purpose of like actually being completed. They were able to hide those names in order to keep those plans moving while the public were focusing on the failed plans with those names that were released.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in a second and explain a couple things that I think.
Oh, first yeah, off, absolutely.
The choice of remember, Eric Trippier was the only president just to have a high school education. Well, I put that way. He has just a high school education, first in the modern day. That's one situation. You have him and have him with, as Dr. Fincher said earlier, the only person to ever drop an atomic bomb or approve atomic bomb was Harry Truman, and never had a college science class. And in fact, I believe he was coming back from Potsdam, if I'm correct, and he didn't really get to see the damage of the first bomb, and let alone approve the second bomb. So, you know, when you start looking at stuff like that, yes, I believe that, you know. And one thing that's really kind of sticks in my mind, and I worked with Lance a long time ago on this, that when on Sunday, April the 12th of 1945, the day that Franklin Delano Roosevelt died, there is still to this day some question about exactly what he died of and how he died. And you could make a good reason if you start putting all this together. You know, why do you have a closed coffin? Why did his coloration turn black? Why was he, you know, the blood pressure and stuff, you know, the situation he had is just really kind of crazy. But there are some people that would believe, and I believe was talking to Stalin or one of Stalin's secretaries when they were mentioning about that, and they were actually encouraging the son of Franklin Roosevelt to investigate it himself, because they said they didn't add up. So when you have alleged your enemy telling you that you should look into something, maybe that would be the case. And maybe this was a case where underneath the people that were tried the failed coup actually succeeded on Sunday, April the 12th of 1945. Right. And another thing that's really kind of crazy. If a person is dying, they may be the best person to end up being killed. Why? Because no one's going to check out somebody they already think is dying to be killed. So, you know, if you're going to kill somebody, that might would be. So assassination attempt on somebody who had little time to live would not necessarily be out of the question for the people like this, especially if they're rich and famous. You go back to looking at the 1912 Titanic going down. Was it coincidental that the three largest people against the
Federal Reserve,
Guggenheim, Astor, and Strauss,
Guggenheim,
all the people that died on the Titanic? I mean, was that a hit? Or is that, you know, when you think it, remember, Captain Smith said, was quoted in paper, "I've never lost a ship." Well, he lost one then. You know, so, I mean, you start looking at this stuff. A lot of stuff what we see, what we've been told, is not necessarily true. But we should question it, put it that way. And we don't. We just accept it being true, and that's it.
No doubt about that, Mike. We all agree 100%. Mitchell, further thoughts of yours? Mitchell, are you still with me?
Yes, Jim. Does anybody think is there anything we can do to unravel the onion that started back then and have it rot from the inside out, so to speak? Is that possible, Mike?
You know, you asked probably one of the most amazing questions ever, and it probably was given to Aristotle and was given to the Greek philosophers and given throughout time, because I do believe that ever since we've had the beginning of man or mankind, we've probably had some of these same kind of plots. It's just, it's changed, it's what, but it's just maybe part of human nature or maybe just part of stuff like that. But yes, I think we should strive to do it. I think we should change how we teach. I think we should do more like blended learning, more inquisitive learning. We need to get our students from just not looking at their cell phones all day long or textbooks and actually start questioning about stuff. But when you accept a 60-second TikTok as your valid truth on something, It's like our generation accepting 30-second news flash, you know, 30 seconds, and then that's everything. It's not enough time to actually get both sides of the story and get you to decide. And that's one thing that I'm so happy with Dr. Fencer and people like himself is that they are getting people to actually think. You know, there would be a lot of people say, oh, my gosh, you know, you can't do that. You can't say this. You can't say that. They want to cancel you and all that. No, we need to have more freedom of thought. We need to have more people like this, Mitchell, because we need to have, and that's how you're going to discover the truth. The truth will come out there, and people who, if they change their way of thinking, would like to start questioning things. You know, what in the world is going on is not a question. It's something, it's an advocation. You know, we can't just sit back and allow this to happen. If we do, we're going to be in so many different wars. It's not even funny. I mean, you start looking at right now, can the United States afford another war?
Well, I think the answer is overwhelmingly negative. I mean, Scott Ritter's observed when he was much younger, you know, decades ago, the United States had a 2.5 war policy that we felt we could conduct 2.5 wars. Today, I don't believe we can even conduct a half. Our supplies are depleted. Our training is pathetic. We've gone woke. The young men who used to be the core of the American military are not going to join this modern military with tutus and pink tanks. I mean, it's just a disgrace. Most of those who are in the military are overweight and out of shape. They're unfit. And Biden is just going whole hog. I mean, this is what happens when you have a non-president, because a real Joe died in 2017, by my best estimate. We've had a series of puppets. The heads of the different departments have been running the shop, and they're virtually all Zionists. You got Merrick Garland as attorney general. You got Mayorkas as head of DHS. You got Janet Yellen as secretary of treasury, and you got, worst of all, perhaps, Antony Blinken as Secretary of State, all of whom seem to be putting Israel first. And it's calamitous. The United States has been used as a pawn by Israel. If you envision Bibi Netanyahu as commander-in-chief, you have a much better idea of what's going on here. Now, today, of course, the report they have presented, or to pursue it, you'd be characterized as a conspiracy theorist, which is, of course, completely absurd, because history is replete with conspiracies. If you don't understand conspiracies, you cannot understand world history. For example, where would Shakespeare be if it were not for plots against the kings and queens of England? Was William Shakespeare then a conspiracy theorist, Mike? I mean, the situation is completely absurd. As I've explained before, they want to designate us. They want to denigrate conspiracy theorists because they're investigating crimes that more often than not lead back to the government. So they're trying to make the very practice of investigating cases that could be adverse to the government as though they were improper, unacceptable violations of social mores and the like, which is really intellectually as absurd as it gets. But the American people are very susceptible to propaganda. And they, even in stunning, obvious, blatant cases like this, are left puzzled and bewildered because it's contrary to what they have been told is the case. And I myself, of course, have been massively denigrated as a conspiracy theorist, where I have pioneered collaborative research, bringing together groups of experts to sort out what actually happened, begin with JFK, then with 9/11, then Senator Paul Wellstone plane crash, then Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Parkland, Charlottesville, Las Vegas, Uvalde, Buffalo, Nashville, latest, this Lewison thing in Maine. Every one of those was a fabricated event that was designed by the government to affect public opinion, where, so far as I can discern, nobody died, with a possible exception of Stephen Paddock in Las Vegas, where we have a body in suite on the 32nd floor, and there's shell casings on top of the blood. Well, bear in mind, once you're dead, you stop shooting. So shell casing should have been under the blood. We'll be right back, and we will take your calls.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We do have a frequent caller to the show standing by, but before I bring him in, I'd like to ask your students, Mike, just the current state of their belief. Do they think Donald Trump was trying to overthrow the government of the United States on January 6th? And who do they think is in the right in relation to Israel? And should the United States be supporting by giving weapons and other kinds of aid to Israel in its onslaught against the Palestinians in Gaza? I'm just interested in their state of mind at present.
I'd like to answer your second question. So I believe about the situation surrounding Israel and Palestine. I don't think, the U.S., don't they have affiliations, they have treaties with Israel, so they have to support them, publicly. I don't know if that's the best thing to be doing, but because they have that, I don't think they can just opt out of a treaty or, it's like their obligation. So, pertaining to my beliefs on it, I do not think Israel is in the right, but I also don't think Hamas is in the right for killing people, because that does not achieve anything.
Do you have an opinion about the January 6th?
I'm not, I can't answer that one.
I wouldn't say that Donald Trump was in charge of doing it himself. I do think that if there was any intentions of trying to overthrow the government, that Donald Trump would have some, the people who work for him take control of that and just give him credit for it if they were successful. But they weren't, so because obviously we haven't heard anything much from it. But I do think there was possible, thoughts to overthrow it. I just don't think there was actually any actions to fulfill it.
Hey, Jim?
Yeah, Mike. Go ahead. Mitchell, sure.
This might be an insurrection, overthrow of the Mike. Government. Every time you vote for an election, you would be overthrowing the government. So that is based on such a bad premise. This is not even a... If you look at most of the legal briefs, all he did, we have, when we have a history of people changing unfaithful electors, that have that situation.
Yeah.
Go back to the Constitution itself. The Constitution states, I think Article 4, Section 4, that we are a republic. The reason why our founding fathers didn't want a democracy is exactly like this. So you would have mob rule. So, the idea that you cannot question your electors, you cannot question the election. I remember vividly, and this was on CNN, and the person never did question it, I believe. They were polling, it's a polling station, I believe, in Philadelphia, and I think it was maybe the 2016 election, but it still sticks, it's so symbolic. Yeah, talking to a person who happened to be a Democrat party person. And he was so excited that they had 150% turnout in this one poll You know, one opponent says
150% of the voters turned out. That's amazing.
150% of the vote, just because 99.9% of the people voted the right way. You know, I didn't say that part. But how can you possibly have 150% and people, it just went by people. And if I was interviewing, I would ask, how in the world can you have more than 100%? Statistically, you shouldn't even have 100%. Somebody would be sick or something like that. Right. So people didn't vote.
When I lived in Duluth, Minnesota for 19 years, it had the highest citizen voter participation rate of any city in the United States, and it was about 70%. It was close to 70%. That was the highest of any city, any community in the United States. So you make impeccable points, Mike. Let me bring in Paul. Paul, the floor is yours.
Well, I heard some of the show. I didn't hear all that much of it. As I mentioned, any quality for Mike was very poor. But let me see if I understand this situation. So Mike is apparently a teacher, and he has students, and there's students on this call. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Mike deals with a lot of international students, national students. We've done any number of programs together, including on JFK 9/11 and others where I was a part of it. And they had been doing research on Smedley Butler, and it's such an interesting case. I thought it would be a good idea to feature. Go ahead.
Okay, what type of students? We're talking about high school, college level, what?
Yeah,
what kind of
high school,
okay.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, Mike, that you haven't taught them about the Federal Reserve and the fractional fractional reserve money system that the Jews have basically used to rule the world for a couple hundred
years.
Well,
there was a lot about the Fed in here, actually, Paul. I don't know if you missed, but, there was some discussion of Fed here and how they were trying to use Smedley Butler to basically conduct an insurrection against FDR because they thought he went too far with a New Deal. Yeah.
Well, that would have been a good idea. I would have supported that because, as you know, FDR was a Jew serving Jewish interest. And so
Hang on, Paul. Is that Mike or Mitchell? Mike?
Yeah, I was just trying to answer his question real quick to try to help him out a little bit. Yes, we tried to put that in there because we would not be in the situation we were in the early 30s or in the situation we are in today if we didn't have the Federal Reserve, the election of senators and stuff like this. They had to have this. This is an essential part. If you're going to write it like the Communist Manifesto, this would be up there in 1, 2, or 3. Yeah, to control the government, you have to have stuff like this. Then you have people beholden to money, and then the rich people would be able to run things.
Right. No, that's how we are ruled. That's that simple. And I just wasn't sure exactly, how what would be the word people use today, based. I wasn't sure how based you were. So I'm just going to make the usual course correction with Jim for all, everybody who's listening here, because I've done this a number of times. And my course correction is just the use of the word Zionist as opposed to Jew, okay, or like, for example, Israel, or this concept of dual citizen. So Israel has only existed since 1948, right? That's the thing. But long before that, centuries upon centuries upon centuries, and everybody who's looked at the issue knows this, and I know that Jim knows this, but I understand why he uses the words he does, but it's, you have to get it clear in your mind. There's a group of people known as the eternal enemy, okay, or the enemy of mankind, the nation wreckers, the culture destroyers, okay? This goes back over 1,000 years and more. So therefore, terms like Zionist are irrelevant. Israel happens to exist now, but without Israel, these people, Jews, who they are, because it's a biological issue. They behave in a certain way, and we all see what the behavior is now, just the same as people in the past have seen what their behavior is. And I'm going to make another quick point, and then I'll just throw it back to you, Jim. I don't think there's going to be a wider war or involvement of all these other states. And the reason I say that is because what are they waiting for? We can only assume that these other states have intelligent, apparatus the same as we, right? So in other words, we have the CIA, the NSA, so on and so forth, right? Russia has the KGB and whatever else they have, right? I'm sure Turkey and Syria and Iran, they have their own intelligence services. So they all know what's happening, and they all know what's going to continue to happen, and yet they fail to act. And in my opinion, that's because they're not going to act. Because if the action was going to prevent what's taking place now and what's going to continue to take place, there's no point in waiting anymore. But here's my prediction for the near future of what we're seeing right now. This event, all right, this ongoing ethnic cleansing, genocide, and basically, you know, what I call real estate redevelopment, which is really what this is, it's going to go on. And nobody is going to lift a finger to stop it, just like almost always. It's unfortunate, but that's the world in which we live.
Well, just a couple of points, Paul, and I certainly appreciate your calling in. Yemen has already declared war on Israel. Well, Yemen is well supplied by the Iranians. They're battle-hardened from all their efforts to restore a form or semblance of democracy to Yemen. They're already engaged. Turkey has been declared to be an enemy of Israel by Israel. They have denounced Turkey and Russia, in my opinion, a very bad move. Turkey has already sent a flotilla of 100 ships to Israel. I think the hesitation is because they had an unexpected, overwhelming negative reaction to genocide in Gaza. The world is opposed to it. And that includes Grand Central Station being occupied by hundreds and hundreds, thousands of Jews against genocide, which is one of the reasons why I continue to draw distinctions that you want to obliterate between Jews generally and the Zionists and Jewish supremacists. They are not coextensive. There are Jews who are not Jewish supremacists and who are opposed to the fascism Israel is displaying. And the fact that you continue to ignore, to not distinguish between the distinct, has bothered me for a very long time, Paul. You have a good mind, but we need to draw distinctions.
I have a better mind, and this distinction matters. There's no distinction to be made. How can you make the distinction? They cannot be trusted. Don't you pay attention? I mean, God, Jim, you don't think that I've already considered this? You don't think that this is baked right into the cake, right? You have to think about this in terms of biology. That's all this is. You can't trust them. What are you going to give a survey and say, hey, are you this or not? Check this box. Please, God, stop being so naive. That's obviously all Jews are not involved in this, okay? But the absurdity, the midwit level of the not all argument is so tiresome at this point. It's already been dealt with by myself and other people very, very long time ago.
Yeah,
you cannot draw distinctions with these people. Sorry. You just can't draw.
Paul,
they cannot be trusted. Okay. Anyway,
Paul, how many times do I have to hear your argument for you to understand that I don't buy it? That's all. I understand what you're talking historically about the menace that's posed by those I would prefer to call Zionists. They've been excluded in countries where they've survived from serving in the financial or in the governmental positions. And I get it. I get it. Believe me, I get it. And today, what I'm saying, Paul, hang on. What I'm saying today, and I think you missed the first part of the show completely, where Brian Chivoli and Mike Adams and a host of others were pointing out, the public image of Israel has been shattered forever by the genocide in Gaza, and it is not going to go on. And I guarantee that your prediction is going to be falsified and falsified in the near future. The world has changed. There are political leaders, including Washington, D.C., that have not caught up with the public. But worldwide, public opinion has changed dramatically against Israel.
So
we in the United States are the Paul, let me finish. We in the United States are the most propagandized people in the world and have the least understanding of the reality of this situation. And that's among the reasons why I like your calling in to remind us to adjust our thinking to something a whole lot closer to the truth. I appreciate Paul.
Okay, well, then let me adjust your thinking properly. It doesn't matter what people's opinions are worldwide. This is simple. These people rule, and they rule because they're stronger and they're organized. That's it. That's all it's ever been, okay? Strength prevails. This, I was going to address this notion to her, what this one young lady said something about, well, I don't think Hamas is right either, right? Okay, this idea that, well, what Israel's doing is not right, but what Hamas is doing by killing some of these Jews is not right. There is no right and wrong when it comes to this stuff. This is known as the struggle. It's nature. Okay, so you have an aggressive, predatory species, right? There is no right and wrong when you fight. What is Hamas supposed to do? They don't have an air force or an army. They're not supported by the United States Treasury. They only have one option. And it, by the way, it's similar to our option, Jim. There's no voting our way out of this, and you know it. The bottom line is history has already spoken on this matter. And what history shows is this, is that these people have to be physically and forcibly removed from your territory. That's it. There's no other solution, and that's why it's already been done. So, Mike, if you haven't taught your class that over 100 times throughout history, these people have been forcibly removed from society, well, then that's a lesson you have to start teaching, because it doesn't matter what people's opinions are. This guy, Mike Adams, who cares what he says? Oh, so his opinion of Israel has now been permanently shattered. So what?
Well, Paul, sometimes your arrogance just discredits you massively. I hate it when you come across as so damn knowing. You're just offensive when you do that, and you don't have a clue how badly it comes across. I give you lots and lots of airtime because I like you and I think you're very smart, but you love to overdo it. Egypt is not accepting the Gazans as refugees. Jordan's not accepting Gaza as refugees. Egypt has 600 tanks lined up. If you're listening to Scott Ritter, if you don't like Mike Adams, he's explaining Israel is done. Netanyahu is done. The whole country is on the verge of civil war internally. And honest to God, Paul, okay, if you don't get your act straight, I'm going to ignore you permanently because you get so damned arrogant. I'm just offended by it. Offended
by it. I'll
believe
it when I see it. Good.
Yep.
Be offended,
okay, Paul.
Be offended.
We'll stand by and I'll bring you back then.
Right.
We can drop Paul from the conversation today. Thank you. Mike, would you like to make any kind of response whatsoever?
I'd like to make a couple points. He was talking about biological, and I think he's referring to as a remember that Jewish people come from different backgrounds, and we have the Khazar Jews who are not one of the 12 tribes of Judaism that end up becoming some of the larger groups. And they voted, I guess, inside the group, and they were actually Turks.
Mike, I can't see on the screen, and I hate that. I mean, yeah, thank you.
I'll just pop in like this. And that would negate part of his argument that all Jewish people was a biological, which is really kind of weird, odd at some point. And then the idea that Hamas did not have a air force, you look at the paragliders and stuff that went over the fence and shooting and with pretty heavy guns. Did quite a bit of damage, so you could say that you can have a air force on a very low level and still be fairly effective. And then the situation, I think, is when you start looking and try to, I don't know if you can blame a whole country or a whole group of people. I don't know, because there's a tremendous amount of people in Israel. Remember, Netanyahu had to put together a coalition government. His people, he's had a very perilous coalition, so there's at least 50% of the people that do not necessarily agree with him. So as just like they did with the Las Vegas Raiders, they fired their coach early this morning about 1 o'clock after they had a deal. Netanyahu may be looking at some big political blowback here too. So I'm not so sure that he's concluding some of the right ideas. But what I did want to mention very quickly is that one of the reasons why we don't see this going quicker may be that many of the people are against Israel, but they're also against each other, too. Turkey would like to establish the Ottoman Empire again. The Ottoman Empire included a lot of the area that Iran is wanting to get into. Iran is supporting Hezbollah and some other groups and is supporting Yemen. Hamas is being supported by others. So even though we have arguments within the the state of Israel and stuff. We also have arguments on the other side. And these are the arguments that are probably causing this to go in slow motion. Does that make some sense to you?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, Israelis thought they could get away with all this without any communication, without any video coverage, and people would only be reading about it. This is where Elon Musk did a great benefit to the Palestinians by making Starlink available. So now Southfront is running video after video after video of the slaughter of the Palestinians. The emotional impact of seeing it happen is overwhelmingly greater than the mere intellectual impact of reading about it. It's having an effect. Israel has shattered its image of being a just or humane state permanently. And the fact is, this is going to be a turning point for its relation among nations. Sad to say, the United States is going down on the same ship. And the more we engage in defense of Israel here, the worse it's going to be for us. And that's completely independent of what happens in the American Congress, which we know is Israeli-occupied territory. As I said before, if you envision Bibi as our commander-in-chief, you have a better sense of what's going on now than Biden, who died in 2017 and has been replaced by a succession of imposters. Mike.
Going back to, I was thinking about something as you said, and I don't know if I still have it with me, but this whole concept of trying to place blame at this point would be, I think rational people should start thinking about a much longer term solution, because this is approaching, you cannot stay in refugee camps forever. The Lebanon has a tremendous amount of refugees. In fact, I think if you look at Lebanon itself, there are as many refugees in Lebanon because of Syria's situation and because of other situations as there are people in Lebanon. So, you know, you, as a country teeters on that type of stuff, it goes back to what we're talking about with Smedley Butler. You know, Hoover had a problem when the people went to Washington, D.C. We showed that one picture where you had all the people going up and down the Capitol, hanging out signs and everything else. You know, they were promised bonuses. And when they were promised a bonus in 1919, it was a pretty substantial amount of money, but they were going to pay it sometime in the future. Well, by 32, 33, there was not enough money to pay anybody any bonuses. And the veterans were extremely upset. Did they have a right to do so? Yes. But then what did the government do? They started shooting at them. A government that shoots itself, what's the difference between us and Tiananmen Square at that point? You know, you cannot have a population where you start killing your own people, and this does not make sense.
Yep. Mitchell, would you like to add a further thought of your own as we approach a conclusion of this show?
Sure, Jim. You know, Israel really has overplayed its hand. And, you know, the question to me is what will bring people, particularly those in the Islamic world, together and rally them for one cause? You know, if Israel tries to essentially erase the Gaza Strip, I believe that will probably do it. We got about 3 minutes left.
Yeah. If the girls would like to add any further thoughts of their own, they're both welcome to do so on any aspect of this whatsoever. Please.
I know Mitchell, he was discussing, you know, finding the solution. I think Mr. Cunningham was too. But at this point in the situation, I feel that it's gotten too complex to find a reasonable solution. And I don't think that a reasonable solution would suit, like, I don't think both parties or any, like, I don't think any of the parties would want to come to a solution where they wouldn't win through battle. I think that, again, it's just gotten too complex, and I think they're just going to keep fighting. And so.
And when I mention solution, I'm not talking about immediate. I'm talking about we have to do something, because you cannot maintain this level for over a period of time. Something has to be done differently.
Yeah.
And if we don't do differently, we would be facing this, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, their grandchildren. This is a problem that's not going to go away.
Contrary to Paul's opinion, this genocide is not going to be allowed to continue. Would you also like to add a further thought?
So I would like to, I agree with Kate. I believe that it's too complex for there to be a clear clear solution for the conflict. I think at this point, honestly, just finding out the truth on the actions that led up to everything that's happening, I think telling the truth is more of a better solution than actually taking a performative action to help guide these countries and help them resolve their issues, because at this point they're hiding too much of the actual truth from us, and that's why we're getting all these different points of views on siding with each country, because we're not aware of what's actually going on.
Very good. Mike, I'd like to just thank you for putting together today's program. I think it was excellent. Would you like to make a final thought?
I have never had more entertaining a podcast than what happened today. And I think that the people who are watching this would really be excited. At the beginning, we try to put out some information. Then when Paul called and your exchange with Paul, I've never seen a person so animated and upset as you are. And I think this is exactly what happened, interchange that we need on podcasting, because we need to challenge people to get them to actually think and quit pontificating, because pontificating is supposed to be building bridges, and we're not building bridges, we're dynamiting these things. So we need to have a dialogue, not war, and I think you're doing a just cause here to try to do that. We may not necessarily agree on everything, but I guarantee you this, that there are some really problems here in the United States, and we need to have all generations look at it.
Let me just close by encouraging everyone to spend as much time as they can with their family, friends, and people they love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here on Revolution Radio this first day of November 2023.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their